on House Bill 2871. Rich Peppers.
Mr. Chairman, I can give you a brief description of House Bill 2871. You heard this for the first time on the 13th of March, a week ago. This makes temporary state employees eligible for group medical, dental, optical, death, and disability insurance and other state employee benefits.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for bringing me back up. I had testified on this bill once before and only signed up again. I should introduce myself, not for the record. Rich Peppers with the Oregon Public Employees Union, SEIU Local 503. And as I said, I've already spoken about this bill with you, but I did want to come back up to let you know that on the fiscal impact statement, we have had a chance since the last hearing to clarify with DAS our position on, in terms of bargaining, what our desires would be at the bargaining table. So even though the fiscal impact is indeterminate, because it could be as low as zero if there's no agreement reached, the potential size of the fiscal impact is cut in half since the last time you've looked at it. And I could go into detail on why, the reasons for that, but I won't do that unless you request me to.
Do you have like an abbreviated version of that?
An abbreviated version is that the two reasons mostly for reducing the impact. One is that we're not trying to cover people who are in very short-term temporary employment, because the mechanics and logistics of putting somebody on a, if they're there for less than 3 months, on a health plan and then cutting them off again right away just would not work out. And so a lot of people who do not work a full 6 months as allowed under the statute, or possibly 12 months as also allowed with an extension under the statute, would not be included in the fiscal impact statement for that reason. And then the other reason is that we think, partly related to the first reason, that there should be and could be a 3 month waiting period to put somebody on the health plan, on a health coverage.
2871.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Or on House Bill 2871. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2871? Seeing no one, will close the public hearing. Committee, let's say it. Ways and Means. Got to go to Ways and Means.
Why does that go to Ways and Means?
Oh, it only has a fiscal of roughly $4
million. Oh.
An indeterminate.
Oh, I thought that they...
I was going to try to sneak that through, but I...
Okay.
I was kind of thinking they'll catch on.
Oh, okay. Are we in work session?
Open a work session at House Bill 2871.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I move House Bill 2871 to Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2871 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Backlund.
I would say we're a pretty brave group. We're gonna move this, I'm sure, and let the Ways and Means people take their wrath out on us. But hopefully it can be considered, and who knows? We might have some good results.
I don't know that there'll be any wrath involved. You know, I think it's a reasonable thing for them to look at. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to make the financial determination.
I agree.
But I think it's something that we should send down to them and have them look at. Any other discussion? Seeing and hearing none, go to call the roll.
Aye.
Excuse,
Walker's here.
71?
Yeah.
Hi.
There you go.
I saw it on TV.
Excuse.
Donner?
Yes.
Hi.
Lennon?
Hi.
Nutley?
Hi.
Nelson?
Excuse.
Nelson is excused.
No.
Hi. Haven't received the required number of votes. House Bill 2871 wings its way down to the Ways and Means Committee. We're going to go into work session on House Bill 2775. Sam Levitt.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2775 is the credit union bill that removes $100,000 limitation on amount may be borrowed by credit unions or authorizes credit unions to offer to members products and services in addition to money-type instruments. It deletes the prohibition on a credit union's investing more than 1% of its assets in stock in a corporation that provides accounting or other services to the credit union. It removes the authority of the Department of Consumer and Business Services Director to prescribe minimum insurance and surety coverage of credit unions, and it also changes provisions regarding closed and open and dormant credit union accounts.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon, here with our attorney, Hal Scoggins of Farley, Wada, and Witt. We had a lengthy hearing on House Bill 2775 in your committee, and through that hearing and discussions with Representative Merkley, we have proposed an amendment to Section 723152, which will make that section a little bit more narrow, and we have provided you with the background language and ask that you support the amendment and pass the bill today.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Nope. Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Yeah, Senator Fiona.
No one else? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2775.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Zahner moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2775. Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 2775 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner.
As amended.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 2775 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the House. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Merkley.
I think the Dash 1 very much improves the clarity of the part that is being changed in Section 2, and it's like a very good bill.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one else, the clerk will call the roll.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Zahner?
Aye.
Baffin?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Allison?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2775 is declared passed. Is there a carrier? Anyone wishing to carry? Representative Rosenbaum.
I would be happy to carry it.
Okay. Rosenbaum will be the carrier. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2775. We're going to move to House Bill 3532. We're going to open a public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3532 allows brew pubs and other full on-premises sales licensees of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to sell beer, ale, and ale for off-premises consumption. Declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you. Mr. Perry?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Bill Perry, Oregon Restaurant Association. Thank you for this opportunity. In short, House Bill 2892 of last session shrank the number of licenses from 36 to 14. In that process, the 14 so-called on-premise licenses were constricted to 4. The brew pub license was left alone. What has happened is you were allowed in the past to take a mason jar, as usually the vehicle of choice, I guess, and you could walk into a different retail malt beverage establishment, fill up the jar, as long as it was sealed, you could leave with it. The brew pub license was left unchanged in the last legislative session, so if you brew on establishment, you can still use that vehicle. The new licensees, which is a majority of the licensees in the state, you no longer have this privilege. McMinnum's noticed that in September, that they were no longer going to be able to use this, and it's a very popular practice up on the Northwest 23rd area of Portland, Hawthorne, some of those different areas. And we tried to fix it through OLCC, but it definitely needed a statutory change. So as of January 1st, when the new license types from 2892 kicked in, this prevented those establishments from doing it. Legislative Council noticed that it was a change in the status quo of the letter you contained, so they put the emergency clause on because there are several establishments in the Portland area that are inconvenienced. Once again, we tried to fix it through OLCC, but they noticed that it could only be done through statute, and so they've been working with us. They officially have no position on the bill, obviously, but Russ Spencer, Ms. McMinimins, talk to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, Russ Spencer for McMinimins. I'd just simply echo what Bill has said. It was an unintentional omission of a privilege. It's non-controversial in nature. We're simply restoring something here. It's really almost a housekeeping procedure here, but it's important to us, and we would appreciate your support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee?
Representative Walker. I have three mason jars in my cupboard at home that I'd like to be retrieved. I can't seem to get them back down to McMinimins, but I think this is a good bill. It shouldn't have happened, and I'm glad you guys brought it forward.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 3532? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 3532.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3532 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 3532 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I think Representative Leonard has something to say to
him.
Representative Leonard, do you have something to share with the rest of the group?
We didn't understand if Vicki said she had a bunch of barrels. How many cars?
It's a lot of bulls. So let's have
three mason
today on
cars.
No meat day.
Okay. hearing no other worthy discussion, clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Backlund?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Wesley?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 3532 is declared passed. And, committee, I would entertain a motion to put this on the consent calendar if committee so chooses.
You got it.
Representative Wilson has moved that we put House Bill 3532 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, so ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 3532. And we will open a work session on House Bill 2084.
Mr. Chairman, 2084, you've looked at a couple of times before. This prohibits health insurers from charging a higher premium for retired employees than it does for current employees. You have a -2 amendment, which is the result of your discussion from last time when I believe it was Doug King came in and talked about the issue. We took out the -1s had the discussion of the composite rate, the inclusion of the concept of the composite rate. This takes that out, and it says merely that retired employees shall be charged a premium according to the appropriate category therein that includes individual alone, individual and spouse, individual and dependents, or other similar category. That's the A subparagraph of section, that's the B section of paragraph 3. The A section says, is the part that says the local government health insurance carrier may not create a group for health care insurance coverage that is separate.
Does anybody else have a dash two?
No? Behind us.
Well, that's it. Mine came with a dash one, I think. Okay. We need dash two.
Something else.
I've got dash two.
It's like everybody needs them.
Everybody needs a dash two. I got a dash one. Here.
Anybody wishing to? Now we're in with
Jim's got him.
Oh, this is one from your staff.
President Leonard, do you have your question?
Thank you.
Oh, this was Representative Leonard's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Are we in work
session? Representative Backlund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the -2 amendments to House Bill 2084.
Representative Backlund has moved the -2 amendments to House Bill 2084. Is there any objection?
Hearing no objection, they are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2084 as amended to the floor with a DPAS recommendation.
Representative Backlund has moved House Bill 2084 as amended to the floor with a DPAS recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
I just want to compliment Representative Leonard for spotting this problem and offering his insight into making sure that we can make a better bill.
Representative Leonard accepts the compliment.
Yes, he does. He's blushing even.
Yes. Anyone else? Hearing no one else, clerk will call the roll.
Ballmer?
Yes, aye.
Backlund?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Smoak?
Aye.
Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2084 is declared passed. Representative Backlund, do you wish to have it on the consent calendar or carry the bill?
I think we should probably discuss this.
Okay.
I'd be happy to carry the bill.
Backlund will carry. Work session closed on House Bill 2084. Let's go to Senate Bill 440. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 440.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 440 limits the minimum 8-point typeface explanation requirement to restrictive provisions of standard fire insurance policies. This bill passed the Senate earlier this month, a vote of 34-5.
440.
Oh, did that happen?
I didn't know the Senate Bill 440.
What?
Well, if it passes the Senate 34-5.
Interesting.
Oh, yes. Probably 24-5.
That'd be 39 votes.
This is a good day. That's more of Leonard today.
We're using the government accounting system again.
This day was going so well for your staff until this point.
Yes, it was.
24.
Mr. Powell, currently you're ready to testify.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Powell. Before you today, we're representing CGU North Pacific and State Farm Insurance Companies. With me is, I have two guests. One on my left, your right, is Tom Crist, an attorney with the firm of Mitchell, Lang & Smith in Portland. And to my right is Tom Mortland, who is Senior Vice President of Claims for CGU North Pacific, also from Portland, and also an attorney. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, first to the vote count that's before you, I have to take credit for the no votes, unfortunately, because it used to be in the Senate, when a bill was reprinted with amendments, you had a couple days after that before it gets to the floor. Well, early in the session, in this particular case, I was in my office writing a floor speech for this bill when I received a call that it was on the floor. And one member raised some questions. Senator Corcoran was carrying the bill, answered them very, very well, and probably was better off not to have written him a speech. I think he did well.
Mr. Chair.
And I think those were safety votes.
Representative Leonard, do you have a question already?
Just a comment. I would just point out that when Representative Corcoran carries a bill, it always gets 5 no votes.
There you go.
It's your day, Representative
anyway,
Leonard.
You did very well. Senate Bill, I've handed you some testimony that I'm not going to read, and in part, this is a fairly simple solution to kind of a convoluted problem that began after the last session with a case from the Oregon State Supreme Court in the Fleming, was the name of the case. And to understand the Fleming case, you kind of have to understand the history of fire insurance law in Oregon. And that's why I'm pleased that the chairman moved this up in the agenda, because otherwise you would probably go to sleep listening to such an interesting subject. But the history of fire insurance, not only in Oregon but across the country, was early in our history, fire insurance was written as a single peril coverage by line in the statute. And used to refer to it as the New York statute. Most states copied that at the turn of the century. So a fire insurance policy was actually printed in the statutes. That fire insurance policy exists in the statute today, just as it did then. Because it was a statutory provision, there were sections of the law that were later added that said an insurance company could change, modify that language to the 165-line policy. But if they did, they had to use a different colored ink. Then, about 1945, another amendment was made to that old section of the law that said you don't have to use a different colored ink, but you have to use a larger type size, and you have to have a heading up above in this larger type size that says there may be some changes down below that could affect your coverage. Then in 1967, the Oregon Insurance Commissioner brought to the legislature a new section of law that allowed multi-peril policies to be sold in Oregon. And that doesn't seem like that long ago, or some of us have been around a while, but the legislature adopted a section separate and kind of distinct from this old fire insurance law. In that new section of law that allowed multi-peril policies, other property coverages other than the peril of fire, be consolidated along with liability coverages into what we know today as a homeowner's policy. Since then, the insurance commissioner has worked with insurers to get them to write those policies in easy to read language, and the insurance industry has done that. Well, why is this history important to this Fleming case? The Fleming issue had to do with an illegal meth lab in a house, and the pollution that escaped from that illegal activity made the house uninhabitable. Fleming filed a claim with their insurance company, but pollution was excluded, and very clearly excluded, and all parties, including the courts in this case, admit that it was unambiguously excluded. Everybody could understand that was excluded coverage. So the circuit court held that there was no coverage because it was excluded. It was appealed to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals held that the language was clear and it was not included. But the Supreme Court, for reasons we still can't quite understand, said, no, we're going over here to the old fire insurance statutes, and here's a little section that says if you don't have these titles, certain size, in front of any section where there's an exclusion, your exclusions are null and void. So the effect of that case was all exclusions basically in property insurance that included the peril fire were null and void. Well, insurers and the insurance commissioner asked the court to reconsider. They did and refused to change that decision. They said, well, this may not be good law, but that is the status of the law today. And so we are here before you today to try to make the status of the law what we all thought it was prior to that case, and continue on the road to make policies easier to understand. In the document that I've handed to you, on the third page, which is number two, at the bottom there is a paragraph from the commissioner's brief to the court that I think is instructive here. And in that brief, the Oregon Insurance Commissioner, called the director of DCBS here, stated the director has a strong interest in simplifying language of policies so that consumers can read them. In the last several years, the director has encouraged insurers to make policies more readable and understandable by grouping terms that relate to specific type coverage. This court's decision in this case, however, to roll back progress already made in making policies more readable as insurers scramble to compensate by adding exclusionary language to virtually every heading in insurance policies. The director believes that this will reduce, not enhance, the readability and clarity of insurance policies. So we're here today to ask that Senate Bill 440 in its A-gross form be passed to the floor. And the bill is fairly simple. In its first section, it adds a section to the law that need not be complied with in multi-peril policies. That's on line 7. And then at the end of the bill, on lines 23 through 24, it says that this section, the section the court used to make this ruling, applies only to the standard fire insurance policies that are described in ORS 742-202 and does not apply to other insurance policies. So we're trying to make it extremely clear what the status of the law is. Then in the middle of the bill, you'll note some language taken out and some added, lines 11 through 14. The language deleted in 11 and 12 deletes, again, an archaic provision in the law that currently is requiring insurance companies to put two mortgagee clauses in their fire insurance policies. One clause that the lending institutions and people use today, and the other one, again, going back to that archaic law that's required another section of the law. So the insurance division, when they review every word, every form that an insurance company uses, what they demand now that the insurance companies put two mortgagees clauses in their contract, the one they use and this one that they don't use. By eliminating this, it simply means they have to have the one mortgagee clause in the contract. The other new language on lines 13 through 14 is at the request of the Oregon Insurance Division, and this simply refers to a current statute that requires the director to review all forms that are submitted that become policies to make sure that they are clear and unambiguous. And so that simply refers to that and makes sure that they go through that test so the consumer is totally protected in this particular scheme. With that, Mr. Chairman, we'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Walker.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just have one, because I'm reading your testimony. And on page 3 of your written testimony, in the fourth paragraph, you're talking about the amendment, a statute requiring the director to disapprove any policy form that is, quote, unintelligible, uncertain, ambiguous, or abstruse.
Abstruse, yes.
Never heard that word.
Is that abstruse? Is that correct?
We don't have a dictionary here, so I'm going to put you on the spot. What does it mean?
I believe it would mean...
Is it abstruse?
I believe it is.
Combination of abstract and obtuse.
Oh, my gosh. We had to put up with this, Mr. Chair, today on meet out day. Enough.
I sort of assume what I know what it means because of all the other words there, but it's just a new word on me.
Yeah, I think it's another way of saying don't eat meat this Tuesday.
That's what I think it says.
Or fill your mason jars quickly. Does somebody have one I can borrow?
Or that's a lot of bull, right?
One time I was carrying a bill on the floor of the Senate, and I saw the word crappie spelled for the first time. It doesn't...
I'll look that one up when I get a dictionary.
Any other questions?
That's my only question.
I don't make any sense.
No other questions for these witnesses? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 440A? Seeing and hearing no one, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 440A.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 448 to House floor with a request recommendation.
Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 448. Senate Bill. Yeah, we are doing a Senate Bill. To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Chapman?
Aye.
Lennon?
Aye.
Barclay?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 448 is declared passed. Is there a motion to put this on a consent calendar?
I would think that's not a good idea.
Probably not a good idea.
Votes in the Senate and we'll give
I think Representative Leonard would like it.
Representative Leonard is asking to carry, I know, but...
I'm being intimidated by one of the members on the committee.
And she was in session today.
Representative Donner, this looks like a good one for you.
You got it, boss.
All right, thank you. Representative Donner will carry and close the work session.
And Representative, if you could be prepared to explain what abstruse means.
Yes.
We are going to go back to House Bill 2084 and open a work session. I believe Representative Backlund has a motion for us. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate that we did this, but I've been doing some thinking, and I prefer that we put this on the consent calendar. Representative Backlund has moved that we put House Bill 2084 on the consent calendar.
We can't.
2084.
That was our favorite bill, Representative.
Oh, okay.
As amendment.
No, we already voted on it. With the amendment on the consent calendar. And as long as we're here.
Can you be allowed?
A couple of you guys didn't vote on this, right?
Yes, we did.
Oh, you all voted on it, okay. We could put it on the consent calendar. Is there any objection to put it on the consent calendar? Representative Backlund feels that it's better. Seeing no objection, so ordered. You got yourself out of carrying a bill, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that very much.
We're going to open a public hearing in House Bill 2500. Mr. Stembridge? You visited this bill once before?
We have House Bill 2500 requires an employee to give a written demand for wages to an employer before a wage claim award may include attorney fees. You have several amendments to this, the dash ones, the dash twos, and the dash threes. The dash ones and twos come out of the Oregon Law Center's testimony, Michael Dale. The dash three comes from Rich Peppers of SEIU.
Thank you. Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dale from the Oregon Law Center. The dash one two amendments would meet my concerns with the bill. However, Mr. Peppers has come up with a better idea, I think, and the dash three, with the dash three amendments, you wouldn't need either dash one or dash two. What dash three would do would simply codify what we all agreed at the last hearing was both good practice and good manners for lawyers, and that is that routinely in a wage claim prior to filing a lawsuit, you would provide the other party at some point prior to filing the lawsuit with a written notice of the demand and an opportunity for the employer to respond. If you didn't do that for some reason, then what would happen would be, unless you could show you had reasonable grounds for not doing so, you would be denied the possibility of recovering an attorney's fee. Now, the one circumstance I can think of that would be reasonable grounds is if the case came to you, let's say 2 days before the statute of limitations was going to run, you might just barely have time to investigate the case, draft a complaint, and get it filed and negotiate later. You might, under those circumstances, still collect a fee. However, absent a showing of the reasonableness of your actions, you'd be barred from the fee. We would, with that modification, be in support or be agreeable to the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Richard Peppers with the Oregon Public Employees Union, SEIU Local 503, and I won't elaborate more on the meaning of the amendments, but just let you know that I talked twice with the sponsor of the bill, once to let him know about the issues and concerns we'd had with the original drafted bill, and talked to him conceptually about an amendment, and the second time after the amendment was drafted, the dash three amendment, a draft not from LC, but the pre-LC draft. And in both cases, he gave me the go-ahead to come talk to the committee with the amendments.
Thank you. Any questions?
No?
Abe Lincoln would be proud.
Yeah. You're reading through your notes, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Abe Lincoln supported this bill when I was up before this, so it's a long time. But thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2500?
It was a month ago.
I appreciate your work on the bill and meeting with the sponsor of the bill. I close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2500.
Chair, I'd move the dash three amendments.
Representative Leonard has moved the dash three amendments to House Bill 2500. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move House Bill 2500 as amended as forwarded to the task recommendation.
Representative Leonard has moved House Bill 2500 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
I'm sorry.
Aye.
Smith? Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Walker?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Backlund?
Aye.
Smoke?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2500 is declared passed, and Representative Leonard will go ahead and carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 2500, and we've got one left, don't we?
Mm-hmm. 193.
Senate Bill 193. And Mr. Kimbrough.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 193 allows a claimant for unemployment insurance benefits to cancel that claim after the claimant requests an appeal unless the appeal is on disqualifications or denials.
Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Knopp and members of the committee. I'm Sharon Hill, legislative assistant with State Senator Avell Gordley's office. We bring Senate Bill 193 before you relating to a constituent matter. We want to first again extend our thank you to the Employment Department. We worked with the Employment Department throughout the interim to try and resolve the constituent matter. And as I would reference the attached letter from Verlina Crosley, that it needs a statutory fix, and so that's why we're here. The current law states that one can cancel a claim for unemployment benefits provided, one, no benefits have been paid on the claim, two, the person hasn't been disqualified or denied for their claim, and three, one has not requested an appeal. Senate Bill 193 attempts to differentiate when you want to cancel a claim about your benefits. The redetermination, the monetary amount, there's a dispute there, as distinguished from disqualifications or denials of actual eligibility for that determination. So the natural instinct would be to potentially appeal if you disagreed about the determination, the monetary determination of your claim, but the way the statute reads, if you appeal at all, you can't withdraw your claim and use another base year or that. So that's the area of fix. And the other piece I wanted to draw your attention to is that during the Senate Business and Labor Committee, the Employment Department provided the letter that's attached, and I believe they have a similar letter to provide you today, where the department does not take a position on the bill, and so it's a pretty straightforward. We've worked with them, and that's the proposal. We'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? No? Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 193? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 193.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Walker.
I'll move Senate Bill 193 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Walker has moved Senate Bill 193 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing and hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Lawson?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Lawson?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Backlund?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Smoke?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill, Senate Bill 193 is declared passed. And I would entertain a motion. Representative Walker.
Yep. Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to put it on the consent calendar.
Representative Walker has moved that we put Senate Bill 193 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 193. And if Representatives Nelson and Wilson would wish to vote on House Bill 2871, we sent that to the Ways and Means Committee. I will reopen the work session on House Bill 2871. Representative Nelson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representatives Wilson and Nelson vote aye on House Bill 2871. We will close the work session on House Bill 2871. And seeing no further work on the committee's agenda, committee adjourned.
I'd like to commend the chair.
How much caffeine was in your coffee this morning? We just moved right along, didn't we?
Why are you asking him? He's the one.
I'm sorry, y'all.